Section 1. Listening. This section of the test has three parts. You will hear three recordings, which you will listen to twice. While listening, answer the questions in the appropriate part of the test. Follow the instructions. When answering questions in the first and second part, use the answer sheet labelled with a cross. When answering questions in the third part, use the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now prepare the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Part 1. You will hear an interview with Russell Davis, a book editor. For statements 1 to 7, choose the correct answer A, B, C or D. There is always only one correct answer. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part one.
Today we are going to talk with Russell Davis, who is a book editor. Russell, could you tell us something about your educational background?
I've got a BA in English from the University of Wisconsin at Green Bay, with an emphasis in creative writing and minors in humanistic studies and American Indian studies. I also worked with a student literary magazine in the roles of fiction editor, business manager, and managing director, and was also intensively involved in the writing community as a whole, organizing public readings, working with established authors to have them come in for guest lectures, etc.
Fine, and let's move now to your professional history, okay?
By the time I finished college, I'd already begun selling my short fiction and working as a freelance editor. I edited anthology titles for Cumberland House and DAW Books, and continued to write and sell my short fiction. I co-wrote a novel for young adults with John Heffers. After I finished university, I was asked to come to Maine and launch a publishing company for a private investor. This turned out to be a double-edged experience. The job only lasted a year and brought a great deal of stress, but I learned a lot about how to run a publishing company and what it's like to edit novels every day. When that job ended, I landed at Five Star Publishing. I now oversee the romance and women's fiction line.
Russell, could you describe your job and your typical day?
Basically, it's my job to review manuscripts and acquire those that meet the needs of the house. After that, I work with the author and edit the book. And this includes both story editing as well as line editing. I also guide the book throughout the production process. Beyond that, I promote the house by making public appearances at conferences and conventions, writing articles, etc. As for my typical day, I usually arrive at the office at 9 a.m. and stay until 6 p.m., sometimes later. Throughout the course of the day, I'll receive, on average, more than 100 emails and get between 15 and 25 telephone calls. I'll review production proofs, answer correspondence from writers, and draft editorial letters. I may write cover or catalog copy, advise an artist on the cover art, consult a designer on the cover design, and negotiate a book contract. I rarely read at the office, especially full manuscripts. Usually, I read at home, a few hours on a weeknight, quite a bit more at the weekend.
What are your favorite and least favorite parts of the job?
The best part of the job is seeing an idea develop into a manuscript, then into a polished manuscript, and finally into an actual book. It's a huge rush to see what was once words on paper in a finished format. Also, calling a new writer who's never been published before and saying you'd like to make an offer on their book. That's a very cool thing. But there are certain things that irritate me. Like, for example, I rarely read for pleasure anymore. When you edit books all the time, it's very difficult to turn that side of yourself off and just enjoy it. I miss sitting down with a good book for company.
Russell, what is your advice for future book editors?
Read anything and everything. In all sorts of genres, in fiction or nonfiction, in newspapers, books, or magazines. As often as you can. Get an education from a good school in English or literature or a related field. Ask questions and speak to people in the field, writers, editors, or journalists. Go to conferences and conventions in the field of your interest. Always be willing to learn about the business side as well as the art side of publishing. Explore the craft of the field at the same time as you experience the art of it.
Now listen again.
Today we are going to talk with Russell Davis, who is a book editor. Russell, could you tell us something about your educational background?
I've got a BA in English from the University of Wisconsin at Green Bay, with an emphasis in creative writing and minors in humanistic studies and American Indian studies. I also worked with a student literary magazine in the roles of fiction editor, business manager, and managing director, and was also intensively involved in the writing community as a whole, organizing public readings, working with established authors to have them come in for guest lectures, etc.
Fine, and let's move now to your professional history, okay?
By the time I finished college, I'd already begun selling my short fiction and working as a freelance editor. I edited anthology titles for Cumberland House and DAW Books, and continued to write and sell my short fiction. I co-wrote a novel for young adults with John Heffers. After I finished university, I was asked to come to Maine and launch a publishing company for a private investor. This turned out to be a double-edged experience. The job only lasted a year and brought a great deal of stress, but I learned a lot about how to run a publishing company and what it's like to edit novels every day. When that job ended, I landed at Five Star Publishing. I now oversee the romance and women's fiction line.
Russell, could you describe your job and your typical day?
Basically, it's my job to review manuscripts and acquire those that meet the needs of the house. After that, I work with the author and edit the book. And this includes both story editing as well as line editing. I also guide the book throughout the production process. Beyond that, I promote the house by making public appearances at conferences and conventions, writing articles, etc. As for my typical day, I usually arrive at the office at 9 a.m. and stay until 6 p.m., sometimes later. Throughout the course of the day, I'll receive, on average, more than 100 emails and get between 15 and 25 telephone calls. I'll review production proofs, answer correspondence from writers, and draft editorial letters. I may write cover or catalog copy, advise an artist on the cover art, consult a designer on the cover design, and negotiate a book contract. I rarely read at the office, especially full manuscripts. Usually, I read at home, a few hours on a weeknight, quite a bit more at the weekend.
What are your favorite and least favorite parts of the job?
The best part of the job is seeing an idea develop into a manuscript, then into a polished manuscript, and finally into an actual book. It's a huge rush to see what was once words on paper in a finished format. Also, calling a new writer who's never been published before and saying you'd like to make an offer on their book. That's a very cool thing. But there are certain things that irritate me. Like, for example, I rarely read for pleasure anymore. When you edit books all the time, it's very difficult to turn that side of yourself off and just enjoy it. I miss sitting down with a good book for company.
Russell, what is your advice for future book editors?
Read anything and everything, in all sorts of genres, in fiction or nonfiction, in newspapers, books, or magazines, as often as you can. Get an education from a good school in English or literature or a related field. Ask questions and speak to people in the field, writers, editors, or journalists. Go to conferences and conventions in the field of your interest. Always be willing to learn about the business side as well as the art side of publishing. Explore the craft of the field at the same time as you experience the art of it.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Part 2. You will hear a radio program, Change Your Life. For questions 8 to 13, decide whether the statements are true, A, false, B, or whether the information was not given, C. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part two.
You will hear a radio program, Change Your Life, about people who have made a change in their professional and personal lives. You will hear the story of Julia Harris, age 36, who worked in sales for years before setting up Northwest Childcare, and right after that, our psychologist will give advice about what to do in similar situations.
When I left school at 18, I joined Selfridges as a management trainee, but 2 years later, a car accident left me unable to stand on the shop floor for hours. Forced to rethink my career, I joined a packaging company and in 4 years worked my way up to sales manager. At first, I was really content, but gradually things changed and over the next 6 years, it became really difficult. Competition was fierce and the company needed big orders to survive. Instead of making us pull together as a team, they made us feel like we were working against each other, and there was unbearable pressure to find new, bigger orders. It became monotonous and I was miserable, but I couldn't just walk away. I didn't have the courage to make a radical change. When I returned from maternity leave after having my first son, Sam, I became even more demoralised. I knew I could find work in sales elsewhere, but the problem was I actually hated selling. 2 years later, when I was looking for a new nanny for my second son, Charlie, and it was really hard to find the right person, the idea of a new job occurred to me. One day, I phoned a childcare agency that turned out to be selling up. It got me thinking, I'm good with people, have a nose for business, and understand what a mum wants when she looks for help. It would be a complete career change, but I felt I could handle it. Also, because I could work from home, it wouldn't require huge capital. After lengthy discussions with my husband Daniel, who is a lawyer, we decided to buy the business. Soon after, I had long discussions with the former owner for several weeks to learn about the business, and I also read up on legislation. Then I took a course for new businesses. Gradually, our agency took off. It's very hard work, but I'm finally doing a job I love. I find each day challenging and rewarding. It also fits well around family life, which means I don't have to find someone to look after my children. Having flexibility makes my new job even more wonderful.
And now, some advice for those who have a similar problem with their job. Follow our 4-point plan. 1. Write down why you dislike your job, to see if there is anything you could do to improve your role. 2. Talk to people who do the same job but for other companies to identify whether the problem lies with the firm or the work itself. 3. Ask an honest colleague to list your key skills. This will help you to recognise what other jobs you may be good at. 4. Keep an open mind and look through all job pages. There may be a position or course that will suit you. Now listen again.
You will hear a radio program, Change Your Life, about people who have made a change in their professional and personal lives. You will hear the story of Julia Harris, age 36, who worked in sales for years before setting up Northwest Childcare. And right after that, our psychologist will give advice about what to do in similar situations.
When I left school at 18, I joined Selfridges as a management trainee. But 2 years later, a car accident left me unable to stand on the shop floor for hours. Forced to rethink my career, I joined a packaging company and in 4 years worked my way up to sales manager. At first, I was really content, but gradually things changed and over the next 6 years, it became really difficult. Competition was fierce and the company needed big orders to survive. Instead of making us pull together as a team, they made us feel like we were working against each other, and there was unbearable pressure to find new, bigger orders. It became monotonous, and I was miserable, but I couldn't just walk away. I didn't have the courage to make a radical change. When I returned from maternity leave after having my first son, Sam, I became even more demoralised. I knew I could find work in sales elsewhere, but the problem was I actually hated selling. 2 years later, when I was looking for a new nanny for my second son, Charlie, and it was really hard to find the right person, the idea of a new job occurred to me. One day, I phoned a childcare agency that turned out to be selling up. It got me thinking, I'm good with people, have a nose for business, and understand what a mum wants when she looks for help. It would be a complete career change, but I felt I could handle it. Also, because I could work from home, it wouldn't require huge capital. After lengthy discussions with my husband Daniel, who is a lawyer, we decided to buy the business. Soon after, I had long discussions with the former owner for several weeks to learn about the business, and I also read up on legislation. Then I took a course for new businesses. Gradually, our agency took off. It's very hard work, but I'm finally doing a job I love. I find each day challenging and rewarding. It also fits well around family life, which means I don't have to find someone to look after my children. Having flexibility makes my new job even more wonderful.
And now, some advice for those who have a similar problem with their job. Follow our 4-point plan. 1. Write down why you dislike your job, to see if there is anything you could do to improve your role. 2. Talk to people who do the same job but for other companies to identify whether the problem lies with the firm or the work itself. 3. Ask an honest colleague to list your key skills. This will help you to recognise what other jobs you may be good at. 4. Keep an open mind and look through all job pages. There may be a position or course that will suit you. Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Now look at part 3. For part 3, you will need the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Please find and prepare it. Part 3. You will hear a radio programme in which experts explain how to make our resolutions successful. You will hear 6 practical strategies about how to reach your goals. Below, you can read summaries of this information, numbered 14 to 20, but in the wrong order. Indicate the order in which you hear the information by writing a number, 1 to 6, next to the number that represents that information. Be careful. There is one extra summary. Put X next to the number that represents extra information. Write your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part three.
You will hear a radio program in which experts explain how to make our resolutions successful.
Every January, we make resolutions and then break them. In today's program, we will give 6 tips or strategies from 3 experts how to stick to our resolutions all year long. Strategy number 1. We are much more successful if we have the encouragement of others. That is the reason why Carrie Cooper, professor of organizational psychology at Lancaster University, suggests getting a resolution champion. Telling someone our goal makes it seem more real and also makes use of our competitive abilities because we don't like others to know we've failed. So find someone who has your best interests at heart and who you can be honest with. Meet regularly to discuss your progress and, if the targets are slipping, chat about revising the plan. So if it's weight loss you're after, set small goals such as 1 kilo a week. Strategy number 2. Break your big goal into smaller ones and enjoy treats for reaching each stage. When we sense potential failure, we give up, says Professor Cooper. With realistic aims, you're constantly having small successes, not one big failure that breaks your determination. If, for example, you want to give up smoking, don't plan to quit on 1st January. Plan to stop by April and aim to cut down by 5 cigarettes a month. Strategy number 3. Resolutions often fail because we don't consider the real reasons behind them. According to Dr. Gillian McKeith, you need to understand why you want to lose weight or find a partner. Connecting with your emotional needs is the key to success. Make a list of everything you want to feel in the new year, not just what you want to achieve. It can be that you want to be respected in a relationship. Recognizing this will really help you choose the right partner. Strategy number 4. Stop thinking that you're giving up something you love. Try to see the benefits of changing your old habits. If it feels like punishment, you won't be successful. Focus on what you'll gain so that you'll always feel inspired. For example, if a healthier balance between your work and personal life is your goal, stick a holiday snap on the fridge where you looked your happiest and most relaxed to remind you of your goal. Strategy number 5. Sticking to resolutions demands a lot of energy. Every aspect of your life is controlled by the nutrients you put in your body. If you are fueled with bad food, you won't have the energy to stick to difficult resolutions. So before you start your resolutions, go on a 2-week healthy and rich eating regime to increase your energy levels. The most important nutrients for energy are those in the vitamin B group, but also in vitamin C, iron, zinc, and magnesium. Strategy number 6. Dr. Mardzin suggests that New Year's resolutions are linked with failure in people's minds. So if your attitude is New Year's resolutions don't work, you'll subconsciously follow this pattern and fail. That's why it is necessary to forget that 1st January start. You'd rather begin the new you on another date, such as 12th February, instead. This works well with diet plans, for example.
Now listen again.
You will hear a radio program in which experts explain how to make our resolutions successful.
Every January, we make resolutions and then break them. In today's program, we will give 6 tips or strategies from 3 experts how to stick to our resolutions all year long. Strategy number 1. We are much more successful if we have the encouragement of others. That is the reason why Carrie Cooper, professor of organizational psychology at Lancaster University, suggests getting a resolution champion. Telling someone our goal makes it seem more real and also makes use of our competitive abilities because we don't like others to know we've failed. So find someone who has your best interests at heart and who you can be honest with. Meet regularly to discuss your progress and, if the targets are slipping, chat about revising the plan. So if it's weight loss you're after, set small goals such as 1 kilo a week. Strategy number 2. Break your big goal into smaller ones and enjoy treats for reaching each stage. When we sense potential failure, we give up, says Professor Cooper. With realistic aims, you're constantly having small successes, not one big failure that breaks your determination. If, for example, you want to give up smoking, don't plan to quit on 1st January. Plan to stop by April and aim to cut down by 5 cigarettes a month. Strategy number 3. Resolutions often fail because we don't consider the real reasons behind them. According to Dr. Gillian McKeith, you need to understand why you want to lose weight or find a partner. Connecting with your emotional needs is the key to success. Make a list of everything you want to feel in the new year, not just what you want to achieve. It can be that you want to be respected in a relationship. Recognizing this will really help you choose the right partner. Strategy number 4. Stop thinking that you're giving up something you love. Try to see the benefits of changing your old habits. If it feels like punishment, you won't be successful. Focus on what you'll gain so that you'll always feel inspired. For example, if a healthier balance between your work and personal life is your goal, stick a holiday snap on the fridge where you looked your happiest and most relaxed to remind you of your goal. Strategy number 5. Sticking to resolutions demands a lot of energy. Every aspect of your life is controlled by the nutrients you put in your body. If you are fueled with bad food, you won't have the energy to stick to difficult resolutions. So before you start your resolutions, go on a 2-week healthy and rich eating regime to increase your energy levels. The most important nutrients for energy are those in the vitamin B group, but also in vitamin C, iron, zinc, and magnesium. Strategy number 6. Dr. Marsden suggests that New Year's resolutions are linked with failure in people's minds. So if your attitude is New Year's resolutions don't work, you'll subconsciously follow this pattern and fail. That's why it is necessary to forget that 1st January start. You'd rather begin the new you on another date, such as 12th February, instead. This works well with diet plans, for example.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. The listening section is now over. Please stop working on this section. Now go on to the next sections of the test.